Hello and welcome to episode 12 of the Blue Cup Tools podcast. I am Francisco Gonzalez, also known as Grunislav, and with me, as
Hello.
Always...
Hello, I'm Ben Chandler. Hello, I'm also known as Ben304.
Hello, Ben304. How are you?
Actually, I'm mostly known as Ben304 on the internet, because that's my actual name. It's not my pretend name.
Oh. So
that's what my parents' surnames are, both the number 304. Well, my mum's was something else, but when she got married to me, you know how it is. Anyway, enough semantics.
Indeed.
What's been going on? I'm good. What's been happening?
Not much. You got new internet, so there's no more lag.
Oh my god, it's amazing.
You know, I don't have to edit the podcast anymore. I'm so happy.
Yeah.
Yes.
Nelly Kudelot got kickstarted. That's pretty amazing.
That happened a long time ago.
Was it? Well, we don't podcast often enough to... So it's news. That counts as news.
Okay, well, good. Yes, Nelly Kudelot got kickstarted. That's good.
Yeah, that's what's been happening. Lots of other things have been happening. You made a Mags game.
I did.
You made a Oro game.
I have no comment about that.
Dude, you posted in the thread saying you were going to make one.
Well, so did you.
Yeah, I know. We both made Oro games.
Okay.
Let's not be coy. Everybody knows which games are out.
I know. I'm just trying to preserve some form of... never mind.
Cat won't mind. Anyway, good.
Yeah.
Lots of stuff's been going on.
Yeah, really, it really has. But it's an interesting way to segue into our topic of discussion today. Oro and Nelly Kudelot getting kickstarted. Because Nelly Kudelot getting kickstarted means that Alistair is going to have to... Or Ali is going to have to work on making that game and getting it out on time. And today we're going to talk about working with deadlines.
Okay.
See, if it was our old podcast, there'd be like a horse sound effect now, but don't do that sort of thing anymore.
An exploding horse jumping over. Which really, I kind of miss the exploding horse sounds. I wonder if I still got them somewhere.
I've still got them, but...
Dude, you know what you have to do.
I don't want to put one in. That's too much work.
Okay, let's talk about... Let's talk about reaching a deadline. Now, you've entered Mags a number of times. You've entered Oro a few times. I've entered Mags a few times. I've entered Oro a few times, you know. And especially now I work on sort of freelance commercial projects. I'm quite often, you know, people give me a deadline and that's the time things have to be done by, you know. And even when we were both doing the bake sale and when I was doing Summer Batch, we had a deadline. So it's pretty common to have a deadline. Whether self-imposed or imposed by someone else for when you're working on a game.
It really is, and it's also really easy to get tied up and not meet your deadlines, which is...
Yeah, you've got a life, you've got a job, you know, you've got other stuff that keeps you away from those deadlines sometimes.
Yeah, but it's important to stick to your deadlines, especially self-imposed ones, because they're really... Especially if you want to break into the industry, quote-unquote, if you want to do it for a living, like you... are shifting over to be doing with your commercial work and your free... Well, no, it's true. It's you're doing a lot more... You have more experience with deadlines because you're doing commercial stuff. I have done freeware stuff and I've done, you know, worked with deadlines for competitions, but I have yet to reach that wall, so to speak. But yeah, deadline control is very important because otherwise you can find yourself taking a really long time to make your game.
Yes, you can. There's a number of things to keep in mind with deadlines. You know, there's a few different things. First of all, if you're setting yourself a deadline, you sort of really, you have to be pretty strict on yourself. You know, it's easy to go, unless it's like for a competition or something like that. If you say to yourself, oh, I'm going to have this done by this, you know, it's very easy to go, oh, I'll get to that later, and I'll get to that bit later, and I'll get to that bit later. And for now, I'll play The Sims, or, you know, for now, I'll play Peggle, or, you know, whatever your distraction of choice is. And you really, what I like to do is I like to break things down into lists. I have big lists. I've got a cork board that I have little push pins into. And I have to say, the cork board's shaped like a mountain range, and the push pins are little pine trees. So that, I am
always
delighted.
That is the best cork board I've ever seen in my entire life.
Yeah.
It really is.
And it's amazing to push these little pine trees into the corkboard. But anyway, so I write myself out a big long list, you know. Someone will send me a list of assets, or I'll give myself a list of assets, and I write them up there. And I take great delight in crossing off each item on my list, you know. And even if I'm really crunching really hard, I'll write myself a daily list, you know, where it'll be like, finish this background, design this character and send it off for approval, and then do these two animations. And that'll, you know, and then I make sure I cross those things off, you know, bit by bit on the list. So if you're really crunching hard, and even if you're not, because, you know, it's good practice, I think. It really helps to give yourself a list of stuff to do. So not only do you keep in mind what you've got to do for the day, but you keep in mind the scope of what you've got to do. So if you don't do this today, then you look tomorrow, you got, well, I'm going to have three times as much work come next week, you know.
I have to say that crossing things off a list is really a satisfying feeling. So if for no other reason, you should make a list just so that you can feel better about yourself at the end of the day when you cross off stuff from your list and you say, yeah, I did it.
Yeah, it's like getting a trophy on a PlayStation game or an achievement on Steam or something.
It's not as satisfying.
Yeah, well, you're a trophy whore, so, yeah.
I know my stuff. I know what I'm talking about.
You really do. You
I mean, I guess you could get your list and cross it off and go, bring, while you do it, and then it would kind of be the same. But
I've never tried it, to be honest.
Maybe you should. Maybe there's an entire area of your life that's not being fulfilled just because of you haven't added one simple sound effect to the most important things in your life.
I can feel the void.
Yeah.
I can feel it now that you've mentioned it out.
Mm.
But anyway, so let's talk about deadlines. We've recently done an Oro, and you did your Oro just after you did a mag. So you've basically been in crunch mode for 5 weeks or 6 weeks.
Oof. Tell me about it. Well... Yeah, but here's the thing. My mags game, I had a month to do it in. I did not dedicate my entire month to my mags game. In fact, I slacked off quite a bit with my mags game. The problem with the mags game personally was that it wasn't originally my intention to enter mags. I just kind of started drawing these backgrounds or a background and some sprites just for fun because I heard the Bertha Butt song. And
yes, you did.
Yes, I did. No question. And so I started doing the sprites in the background, and I thought, oh, this will make a cute little game. And then Mags came around, and I thought, okay, well, that'll give me an excuse for some structure to actually give my game a purpose, because I had no idea what I was going to do. So I entered Mags, and I came up with the story and everything. Well, I say story, but I mean puzzles. That's not going to win any Pulitzers anytime soon. But
let's hope not.
Yeah, unless their standards have really dropped. It wasn't something I was really passionate about, and I wasn't like, okay, this has to get done on time. You know, I kind of was like, yeah, I'll get it done eventually, but I managed to stick to the goal and finish it, but I wasn't really particularly hard on myself to finish, whereas the Oro game I was really quite eager to do and wanted to make sure that I had plenty of time to do it. Now, you surprised me with your diligence, and you actually managed to finish your Oro game in 5 days.
Sure.
And I
actually, the last time I entered Oro, which was in 2008 with Manboid versus Dr. Sock, I also finished in 5 days.
Wow. How do you do that?
My thing is this. When I have an idea and I know how long I have to make the idea, you know, for example, 1 week, I know a week's not a lot of time. And I know there's another little thing that happens to me is I'll put stuff off. Like I go, I'll sort of, you know, I'll get that and I'll do that animation later and I'll do that a bit later and I'll get to that bit. And I end up with a big pile of work, like polishing. Like I'll have a game design in my mind and go, well, I can build that in 7 days, when really I can build it in 7 days, but it needs another 7 days to polish. So I know when I've got a week, I go, well, what's an idea that I can design that I know I can build in 2 or 3 days, and then I'll have that much time again to polish it up. And if it doesn't need polishing, well, that's all well and good. But if it does, then I hate releasing buggy code. I hate releasing games that aren't polished. So I make sure I get an idea and I go, what can I make in a week? What do I know that I can make in a week? And not give yourself an idea that's not challenging, because I enjoy the challenge, you know, make stuff that you're not used to doing and everything like that, but be confident that you can build it in a week. I think even if you are trying innovative stuff or new stuff, it's important to know your production pipeline, which is something you know, that if you're going to be making games a lot, you should really have a pipeline worked out. And that is the process you go from, you know, each step of things. Like, I have a production pipeline for characters. You know, I know where I start with a character and I know how to get to the end product. And it's just going through that process, you know. The same with backgrounds. If I think about a scene, I have a range of techniques and I go, you know, this is how I'll start. This is how I'll, you know, carry it through. And that's how I'll end up with a final product. So you should know your method before you go, I'm going to make a game in a week. I have no idea how to code.
Which that's never stopped me before.
Well, yeah, but you know how to use you know how to build a game in AZS, and you know how to build the type of game. So before you even start making your idea, you should be familiar with the tools you'll need to pull your idea off. You know, even if it's code you've never written before, you should know the concept of how to structure your code so you'll get the end result. Even if you've never written it before, you should know how to write it before you start your project. You don't want to spend half your time learning if you've only got a week.
Absolutely. You should definitely work within your means. One of the problems I had with my Mags game was that I wanted to code a Dance Dance Revolution style minigame, which ended up getting reduced to a Simon Says minigame because I had no idea how to do that. And I thought, well, I can probably figure out how to do a Simon Says minigame, but I didn't want to spend days and days trying to figure out. And if I hit a roadblock, when I hit roadblocks, I tend to get frustrated, which is one of the reasons that my Ocean Spirit Dennis game took so long to come out, because I couldn't figure out how to code the health bar. And once I got that done, it was just a matter of crunching, and I was able to finish it in like a day. But yeah, it's definitely work within your means. Don't pick a deadline to learn how to code something that you're not familiar with, because the added pressure of knowing that you have to get something finished is not going to help it if you get frustrated. And also, yeah, your advice is very good to take to heart, because I believe I had my game fully playable by about Wednesday. So it took me about 2 days to put the whole thing together. And I think what a lot of people do, and I find it happens to me too, is you get so into the art aspect and the little details and stuff that sometimes when you're building your game, you tend to focus on that and just kind of program as you go and not have a fully playable build for quite a while. And it's tougher to do when you have a bigger game. But when you have something like that's a one-week game, I think the most important thing is to make sure that it's playable and it's not going to crash, and, you know, just have your placeholders and stuff so that you can go back and spend the rest of your time putting in all the extra stuff and the extra polish, as you say.
Yeah, I agree. You can put in a pickup animation at the last second, but you know, if you're coding inventory stuff or, you know, dialogues at the last second, then you're probably in trouble.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I remember, like you say, a week at first sounds like it's a long time, but
does it? When I sit down, I've got a week to make a game, I'm like, oh crap.
Well, it sounds like a lot because you think, okay, well, a week's a long time. If I spend, you know, 8 hours a day working on my game, that's a lot. But you don't necessarily spend 8 hours working on your game. So yeah, it sounds like a lot at first, but there's always this point where, at least for me, I find that you have a little freak out. It happened to me in Mags. I remember I went to bed, it was like a week or two before the thing was due, and I still had quite a bit to go, and I was falling asleep, and, you know, that little period where you're about falling asleep and your mind starts telling you things.
Sure.
And I was like, oh my god, there's only a week or two left. Oh my god, I'm not going to finish. I have so much left to do. And I had like a little mini freak out. Mm. And yeah, so that happened to me with Oro as well, even though I was making pretty good time. Because I really wanted to get my Oro game finished.
Yeah, Mags, I know you did.
I could have lived without, but I really wanted to get the Oro game finished. And not only did I want it to get it finished, but I also wanted it to be, you know, of passable quality. So
sure.
Yeah.
I think there's certain things you can do if you find you're not going to make your deadline. If you sit back and you go, there's no way I'm going to make this deadline, there's stuff you can do to sort of, you know, beyond writing lists out and beyond going, I have to work harder, you can do certain things to sort of help make ensure that you're going to hit your deadline. First of all, cut content. This is a really big thing to talk about, you know, because we've just seen Double Fine do what they just did in their big Kickstarter, where they're splitting the game into two different parts, you know, because they were, I mean, obviously there are...
Is that what they're doing in the end?
Well,
I'm paying attention, to be honest.
I think, but somebody on Twitter mentioned this, and I thought this is a really good point, is that one thing you can do if you find your project's becoming too unwieldy is you can cut content. I point at Full Throttle as an example of a game which had a fair bit cut out because they ran out of time and or money. And time is money, let's face it, when you're talking about professionals who are getting paid a salary.
Yeah.
You know, you have to get your game out. This is why we have deadlines, you know, especially for someone like me who works on freelance projects, you know. There's a reason why you have to set deadlines on yourself. Something that I always look at is I go, well, I'm getting paid this much per asset, you know. And I need this much to, you know, you need this much money to sort of live on. I have to paint this much stuff per week in order to go, well, I've made a week's wages, you know.
And if I can eat this week.
Yeah, exactly, man. You know, if I sat around playing Nintendo all the time and go, oh, I'll get to that later. Not only are you unlikely to get future sort of commissions from that person, it also means you don't get paid very much for the week because you spent your week playing Nintendo instead of doing your work. When you're doing freelance stuff and you're getting paid per asset, you really can't, like, there's jobs where you can just sit around and go, oh, I'm at work, I'm getting paid, you know, I don't have to stress about everything, I'm getting paid for this, who cares, you know. When you get paid per asset, you really have to be quite hard on yourself, you know. You got to say, well, I have to paint two scenes this day or my day really hasn't been worth it. So yeah. Deadlines... Sorry.
No, go ahead.
Deadlines are very important for certain reasons, you know. We both entered the bake sale, as I talked about, and I entered the summer batch. And it's, I had to ask for extensions on both of those projects. And it's really hard when, you know, when it's not your project and there's other people involved, you know. It's really something when you need to ask for a thing and you're holding other people back because of you haven't finished your idea. I mean, in both cases, I was probably working on a design that was too ambitious, so I wasn't following the advice I gave earlier. But yeah, well, we all have failures.
First off, I wanted to say that I find it very amusing that you said play Nintendo, because I'm sure you meant that as a blanket statement for, you know, just video games. But it's funny because I haven't heard anyone say play Nintendo since like the early 90s.
Oh, I have a Nintendo.
Well, I know, but...
And a GameCube.
I know, but, you know, usually people would say, oh, I stayed home and played Nintendo all day, when they, you know, they could have met Sega or something else, because Nintendo kind of became this whole blanket thing, like, you say, like, I'm going to Xerox. Yeah, like, hoovering the carpet or Xeroxing, you know, whatever. So, I think it's pretty funny that you're keeping that alive, if that was your intention, and if it wasn't...
It wasn't.
Oh.
I'm just an outdated kind of guy, that's why
you actually meant... That you were playing Wii?
Well, any of my many consoles. I just leaned over and looked at them in delight.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah, but the second thing was that, when you're working on a team, deadlines become even more important, because you don't want to be that team member who holds up the project because you're the one that isn't performing. Because we all know what it's like to have, you know, a project, a team project, even if it's just a freeware project where you get held up by somebody, you know, be it your artist or your programmer or your musician or whoever. And yeah, it's not a good feeling when you're essentially without anything to do and you feel helpless because there's nothing you can do except nag everyone, which I've seen on your list is sometimes the thing that you have to put on your list.
I nag daily if I have to.
Nagging can help.
I think if you're going to be a project leader, you have to be on top of everything, you know.
Yeah.
And I'm sure people hate it when I nag them. I don't care.
Well, you have to nag, because otherwise sometimes, you know, people just are not dependable sometimes. That's just a sad fact of life.
it's really hard if you've got a project and it's your own project and it's your baby. It's really hard for anyone else to love that project as much as you're going to love it.
So oh, yeah.
You know, I've worked on quite a few team projects, and you're never as motivated working on someone else's game as you are going to be working on your own, which is a really sad thing to say. Yeah. But when it's your baby, you know, it's perfect in your eyes. And when it's someone else's baby, there's always be stuff you're like, oh, I love this game, but I wish it was a little tiny bit more this way or a little bit more that way. So, you know.
Now, what do you think if it's a mutually developed idea? Wink, wink.
Don't be coy. Nobody likes fish.
Plenty of people like fish, especially you cat.
Oh, dear. Anyway, so I think you have to be prepared to make some sacrifices if you're really serious about making your deadlines. And deadlines are a big evil because stuff is going to get cut from your game. Yeah. You know, it happens. It's happened to me. Man, the middle section or everything past the middle of Piss, which I made for the summer batch, I despise, you know, except the graphics. But I had to cut so much from that game. I remember cutting 5,000 words out of the script, which is a lot for a game written and drawn and programmed by and designed by one guy in 3 months.
That's like a high school essay.
Yeah. Well, that's like several high school essays. Depends on which class. But yeah, no, I remember cutting 5,000.
Yep. Never mind. Sorry. I went to a really demanding high school.
I can see that. I cut, 5,000 words from the script. And yeah, it always sucks to do it. I can tell you this, it absolutely sucks to have to drop your ideas, but sometimes you have to make a sacrifice because you'll either release the game and you're slightly unhappy with it, or you'll spend forever, and I mean forever, because you'll never be perfectly happy with an idea. You'll spend forever trying to get the game to a point where you're happy with it.
So, yeah, I was reading on Twitter yesterday, and I saw Theo Warren tweeted that it's amazing how usually when you cut out the bit of a game you like the most, the game comes out better for it, which I thought was interesting, because it's really a hard thing to do. But yeah, it's true. Sometimes it does come out better for it.
As a designer, you get very obstinate about your ideas. I know this, you know, I've had ideas where you wake up in the middle of the night and, you know, you go, I'm a genius, you know, this is going to change the world of gaming. I'll be a king. I'll sit on a throne of, you know, squatting servants and, you know, well, maybe I'm the only one that takes it this far, but, you know, it's natural when you get a good idea. It feels great, you know, to have that sort of creativity and go, man, I thought of that. That's going to be amazing. This will change gaming forever. It doesn't often do it.
No.
Name one game other than like Doom and Command and Conquer that have changed games forever. But anyway, on Maniac Mansion. But anyway, it's like this becomes the sort of, you feel that it's a fundamental part or a cornerstone of your game, and often it's not. You know, games with missing content can still be amazing.
Yeah.
Look, like I said, Full Throttle, look at Planescape Torment. I know you've not played it, but they had so many ideas in that game that they just simply had to cut out a lot of it just to get it done, you know? And therefore, there are parts of the game that are slightly disappointing, parts of the game where there's stuff missing. That doesn't stop it from being one of the greatest games of all time.
Well, yeah.
So it's better for a game to get released with some of the amazing concepts missing than to go into development hell forever and never get released. You know, you have to make sacrifices. And it sucks to make sacrifices, but you gotta do it.
I can tell you, I was really excited when there was that, well, there still is that thread on the AGS forums about AGS cart and how people were programming the driving thing for the cart game, because I wanted to have a driving bit in a Golden Wake. I wanted to do like an LA Noir where you could drive around the city and go around, and I was really excited about that. Okay. And then I thought I would use the AGS cart thing, but then I thought that's going to be really ambitious. It's really unnecessary, and it's really just no. So as much as I liked the idea, I cut it, and I can tell you this, I don't miss it at all.
No, I don't think... I honestly don't think your game suffered at all from cutting that bit.
Nope.
Having played your game and, you know...
Yeah, it's really not a thing that is necessary at all. But, you know, when you're working on something and the sky's the limit, you tend to throw in things that seem like a good idea, and then with later realization, you come to see that they're not. So...
Absolutely.
It's a perfectly natural thing.
I feel a game can be strengthened by cutting out stuff, you know, obviously, yeah. Because you trim the fat, you focus on what's really important for a game, you know, and then you can spend that any time that you've got left on doing stuff like animations and that, which build immersion anyway, so, mm-hmm. Yeah. I hate cutting stuff from games, and I hate deadlines, and yet I always set myself deadlines because it's important to say, I've spent enough on this project, I've got, you know, especially for me when I'm working on, you know, I'm working on a number of projects at once because, you know, I'm freelancing for a number of guys and a number of projects, and they've got deadlines for themselves and also for myself, you know, if I don't finish this scene in time, then I'm going to be late, not only in this game, but on that game and then that game, all of which I'm working on at once. So it's pretty, yeah,
but
it's pretty essential.
Don't you find that working on several projects at once breaks up the monotony? Because if you get sick of working on one, you can just shift your focus over to another one.
I honestly don't really find it that monotonous working on games.
Well, no, but I mean,
find,
if you're...
Well, I find implementing stuff like, you know, writing hotspot descriptions and stuff like that, I find that quite monotonous. But painting backgrounds, you know...
Right, but just like working on... certain aspects of the game can be, you know, it can get kind of monotonous, I find, anyway. I mean, I'm not like you. Like, you know, painting backgrounds for me is not something that I can do and be relaxed about. Like, every time I'm painting a background, I'm just thinking, okay, how do I make this not suck? Let me make it suck less. Let me just, oh god, it sucked. No, wait, no, it doesn't. Okay, you know, it's a constant uphill battle for me. So then when I finally finish a background, I just think, okay, let me not look at this right now because then I'm going to think it sucks. And then I go to do something else, like, you know, writing dialogue. See, I love writing dialogue, and I love writing I love writing the games. My favorite bit is what you hate. I like writing the hotspot descriptions. I like writing the dialogue. I like writing the characters and stuff. But, you know, as soon as I get to a bit where I realize, oh, I'm going to need another visual thing for this, I'm going to need another character, then I start thinking, oh god, I need to paint something else. Like what I'm working on right now, I'm like two puzzles away from finishing my second chapter, and I realized that one of the puzzles is going to need another character to be there. So that means I have to draw another character, I have to draw another character portrait, I have to do all this stuff, and I'm dreading it because it just seems like it slows me down. So, you know, yeah,
well,
I
wouldn't say that I hate writing. I mean, if it's not obvious from playing like Piss or Falling Skies, I really, really, really like writing. I love having my games are extremely wordy, but yeah, I don't know. I think you need to practice stuff regularly. Like I paint, I don't even know how many backgrounds I've painted in the last year. It's a lot, you know. There's some days I'll paint two scenes a day, you know, or so. So
yeah, I'm lucky if I paid two scenes a week.
So for me, it's like it's just part of life. You wake up, you know, you have your breakfast, you go to work. If I've got work that day, I get home, I paint, and there's backgrounds. There's there, you know, it's just part of life for me. Once you do something regularly enough, which it's hard when it's your hobby, when AGS is your hobby. But even when I wasn't getting paid to do anything, you know, I remember when I made Airwave. I drew that whole game in 3 days. I did three backgrounds each day, and then I did all the characters on the third day. It was a long weekend, and I didn't have to work, so I was just like, I'm going to draw a game this weekend, and then I'm going to spend a month building it. So I did, you know? That's, yeah. Something like that, it doesn't become such a big deal once you've done it so many times. I don't even know how many backgrounds I've painted. You know, I wish I knew. It's probably quite a few, because, you know, I've done a few games, and they'll have a few backgrounds, but when you paint, and now that I'm really starting to find a technique that works for me, you know, for each style. You know, I don't, it used to be like if I had to draw an interior, oh man, I hated drawing interior backgrounds because I wasn't good at them. And now that I've done, you know, now that I've done Blackwell, I mean, it's Dave Gilbert. All you ever draw is interiors. That's not true. I'm sorry, Dave. That's not true at all. I've drawn.
He doesn't listen to our podcast.
He doesn't. No. No. But anyway, he did once, I think. But yeah, it's once, cause I've practiced drawing interiors so much now, I just sit down and I go, I have to draw an interior and I just start. And well, I finished one up last night and I'm halfway through another one this morning and it's not even 11 o'clock. So, you know,
that's definitely an advantage because I can definitely agree with that. I've more or less settled on a style, I guess you could call it, even though, as I've mentioned to you, I don't know how to define my visual style, really. Even though you say and other people say that they can tell a Grundislav game a mile away, which I can understand that. Well, of course. Well, I can tell a Ben 304 game from a mile away.
Everyone can tell that.
Right, but I mean, like, if someone were to ask me what is Ben's style, I could easily describe it. Whereas
glowing eyes.
Well, you haven't done that in a while, actually.
No, I haven't. Yes, I have.
When was the last game you did with glowing eyes? Piss?
That game that I've been working on that no one's allowed to know about.
Piss?
No, that other one. With the wobbly bass in the music.
Oh, right! I forgot about that one because you haven't done anything in such a long time with that.
What, 3 weeks?
Hey man, I'm very fickle.
I can see that. What a cat. Anyway, sorry.
Look, I associate errors of game design by errors. That was what you were making that when I was making Bertha Butt, and I finished Bertha Butt, and I forgot. So I forgot about that game. Okay, right. All right, well, okay, so if someone would just, yeah, I mean, Ben 304, he has painterly, you know, painterly, that's such a, I don't know how I feel about that word, but that's another tangent. You have painterly backgrounds, which are very easily distinguishable. Your sprites, yeah, they tend to have glowing eyes. They tend to be fantasy, funny skin colors, not human usually. But even when you do human sprites, you have a very specific palette, I guess, or yeah. So that's how I would describe yours. Now, if someone were to ask me, well, what's my visual style? I guess I would say, well, I rotoscope a lot. And
I can tell your color ramps. I've mentioned to you this the other day. I can tell your color ramps, like, a mile away.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Especially skin tone. I can pick your skin tones from anyone else's. Yeah. It's like some people, you know, it's like looking at a Big Brother sprite. You know it's his just because of the skin tone.
Mm.
So, yeah. But it comes back to what I was saying at the start, where you need to establish a pipeline, establish a method that works for you, so you don't sit down and go, oh man, I have to draw a forest today. Oh man, not a forest. And so, it's, you know, 18 right, right. hours later, and you're still sitting there going,
and like I was, a forest. Yeah, like I was saying, and like you were saying, based on what I was saying, based on what you were saying, was that, yeah, I think I've finally gotten to a point in my game art where I've reached a style that I'm comfortable with. I don't feel the need to experiment anymore. Like, the Ben Jordan games, as I've said several times, were a really good learning experience because, as you can see how the art progressed from the first one to the end, I was really just experimenting with every single game. Not so much with the sprites, more along with the backgrounds, but now that I've found a background style that I'm more or less comfortable with, drawing backgrounds isn't that tedious anymore, because no matter what it is, I can just say, okay, well, I'm going to do this, and I can apply this technique. I have the tools in the toolbox, as you say.
Hmm. And,
you know, it doesn't matter whether it's an interior or an exterior, although to be fair, I prefer drawing interiors to exteriors because...
Freak.
Well, trees are hard.
Trees are not hard. Trees are lovely. I'm looking out my window right now at a tree whose leaves have turned slightly yellow.
Yeah, that's great.
And I'm like, it's so,
drawing them
so
and
pretty.
Getting them to look good is... You know how long it took me to get that Royal Ponciana background looking all right?
I do know.
I struggled with that. Yeah, you were there. You Sergeant Sweetston me. But anyway. But yeah, once you settle on something that you're comfortable with, it becomes substantially more easy to draw stuff or to feel comfortable with your background.
Sure, and I would
production faster.
I would like to point out that that doesn't mean you should sit on your laurels and go, oh man, I can draw backgrounds now, I'm never going to learn anything again. There's always something you can learn that'll not only make your stuff look better, but make it look better faster and make
it look easier.
You know, so...
You should absolutely never reach a point where you say, oh yeah, I don't need it. I'm just making them all like this from now on. And you suddenly become a redneck for some reason.
Yeah, I don't know why that happened. Maybe you've got something to rant about. But
maybe. We'll worry about that later. I forgot. We went on such a tangent. I don't even remember what we were originally talking about.
Deadlines.
Oh, yeah, deadlines. Yeah. You know, I once went on a... Speaking of rants, I once went on a rant because I remember one of the best pieces of advice I could probably give people, especially if they're doing freeware games, is don't give a release date if you're not ready to commit to that release date.
Yeah.
And I remember when I was making the deluxe version of Ben Jordan 2, I said that it was going to be ready, it doesn't matter, but I said it was going to be ready at some point, might be ready at some point, and then that date came and went, and some people were upset that I hadn't delivered. And I got kind of upset and pissed off at the people, because I was thinking, you know, this is a freeware project. I'm depending on other people, not just myself. You know, I can't expect everybody to deliver because it's a free... And this applies only to freeware projects, obviously, but...
Yeah.
If you have other people who are helping you out with stuff, giving up their own time to help you and, you know, not getting paid for it, you can't expect them to bend over backwards to get you your stuff because, I mean, there's really no incentive for them to do it aside from the kindness of them wanting to help you out. So... It kind of got under my skin, the fact that people were like, oh, well, you said that. And yes, it was my own fault for saying, you know, that I was going to have things ready at a certain time. But at the same time, you know, to expect that people doing freeware stuff as their hobby to, you know, put their necks out and risk everything.
Put their money on the line.
Yeah, put their lives on the line. No, just to expect people doing a project as a freeware hobby game and, you know, have it done. I'm losing my train of thought, but you know where I'm going with this.
I know where you are. Basically, you're saying if you get demanding about a game that you don't pay anything for and that the developer doesn't get, you know, paying you for, you don't.
Yeah.
So basically, don't set deadlines for freeware stuff, and if you do, make it realistic. It comes back to setting realistic goals.
Exactly. You know? It's a twofold problem, because on one hand, the people shouldn't demand so much from freeware, and on the other hand, the developers shouldn't say, oh, well, it'll definitely be out at this time when they know that they can't make it, so...
It comes back to overcommitting yourself and stuff like that. When people email me and go, you know, hey Ben, how are you going? I'm looking for someone to draw some graphics for my game. This is how much I want. How much do you want in money and how long will it take you? They're the two things you always get asked. So you have to learn to set yourself a realistic schedule. You know, go, yes, I know I'll take this long. And my little trick is always give yourself a little bit more time than you need, because you never know when your grandma's going to need to get taken to hospital, or, you know, something's going to come up. You know, for me, I can have a gig appear suddenly and there I've lost a whole day, which is two scenes worth. You know, so if you get it so it's right down to the wire,
yeah,
you're really going to be stressing for no reason. The other day I quoted somebody, they asked me for a quote for a game, and you know, it wasn't much. I could probably draw the entire game in a week, and they asked me how long I'd need, and I said 6 weeks, because I know that I've got, you know, two other games that I'm drawing for at the moment, which has now turned into, you know, four. Mm-hmm. And I know that, you know, I've got to not only look after these guys, but look after everyone else as well. So I gave myself way more time than I needed. I did point out that it was a very generous allotment of time. But you gotta keep yourself safe, so if they come back and they're like, oh man, we're still waiting on this stuff, you can say, you know, well, I'm still working within the schedule. Mm-hmm. And if that doesn't work for them, you know, they'll find someone else. Yeah. So it comes down to setting yourself a realistic goal, knowing how much you can do in how much time, and getting on with it. I think they're the three sort of main factors in keeping a deadline. Setting yourself realistic goals.
Yes.
Keeping track of those goals so you don't fall behind.
I feel like we're a PowerPoint presentation now. Yeah. Bullet points.
Good. And then working hard to make sure that you reach your goals.
Good.
Good.
Yes.
This has been Dr. Ben Chandler, professor in AGS. Thank you.
Does that stand for a gassy, silly man?
I didn't realize silly man is one word, but now that it is, I'm going to put that on my business card.
It is Dr.
Ben Chandler, silly man.
Really, where did you get your doctorate? I'm curious.
You know, that Operation board game?
Oh, sure.
Yeah. When you get the nose to light up, that means you've got your certificate, right?
I thought the nose lit up when you made a mistake.
Shit.
You're a fraud!
Oh, no!
Anyway,
I would say a good way to get used to working with deadlines and stuff like that is to enter mags.
Yeah.
And to enter, I've entered quite a few competitions. I've entered Oro twice. I think I've entered mags four times. I entered another competition. So, you know, I think I've entered like seven comps or something like that. Yeah. So you really get used to, you know, it's really sort of pushing yourself to get used to working with a deadline. So I think for any aspiring game developer who's just sort of, you know, found their feet and they're looking to start making games because they've figured out how to code and they've figured out how to draw and animate and, you know, and they've got a design they like, a really good place to start so that you get used to working with the deadline is to enter mags. My first proper AGS game was made for mags.
Yeah, mags is really a great resource to,
yeah, absolutely,
to get yourself to budget your time.
Actually, my first three AGS, proper AGS releases, that was Trans-Pacific Shoot, I Got Abducted, and Manboy vs. Sox, were done for competitions. So that's how that, yeah, that they really sort of help you to go, right, this is my goal. This is, you know, and you can do a lot in a week. Look at Eric Colossal's automation one room, one week game, and look at Vince 12's Anna. Those were both one room, 1 week, and they're amazing, you know. So you can do a lot in a week.
Yeah.
You know what you're doing.
Mm-hmm. Well, was Linus Bruckman a one room, 1 week?
No, I don't think so, was it? Might have been.
Well, it might have been because it was only one room.
How dare you, Vince 12? Stop being so... Yeah, but look at Resonance. That took like 80 years to make, so...
Well, there you go. That evens it out. It just goes to show you.
Take that. We'll get him back on the podcast and poke him with sticks.
Yeah, good. I can't wait.
Good. Dude, and steal all the trophies from his avatar where he's holding all the trophies.
Wait, that's not Katy Perry. I'm not Adele. Oh, it's Adele. I'm not hip. I don't know who anybody... I don't know what the kids are listening to.
Oh, man. Come on. There's a fire... I'll stop.
This never stopped you before.
I know.
At least it's not Imogen Heap this time.
Oh, man. Imogen Heap is lovely. How dare you, sir?
I know she's lovely. I know she's lovely.
She's a lanky, foofy-haired fairy geek. And I'm quite sort of infatuated with her. But anyway, so...
We're all infatuated with her.
Well, not everyone. People that I've never encountered. I've been doing my best to make sure everyone encounters Imogen Heap. This is our podcast. Listen to Imogen Heap or you're not allowed to have any more. Everyone that posts a reply needs to say, I've listened to Imogen Heap.
And watch the video of her on YouTube with the hands.
It's the gloves. The gloves.
On her hands.
Yeah. But anyway, so... One thing you can do.
Jeez, you're so relaxed, Chandler. Relax. We're not on a deadline. It's our podcast. We can talk about whatever we want, and as long as we need.
This is bad advice. I'm trying to instill urgency in people so they can get back to their games and go, yes, 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 yes.
If they're listening to our podcast, presumably they're not working on their games. I mean, I would admit they might be, but...
Well, this comes to my next point. That
they're probably driving their car or jogging or something.
Right. This segues in beautifully with the me singing along thing. When you're working your game, you know, it's easy to get distracted by the internet.
Oh,
I have a Twitter account.
Yeah.
I have, you know, I know what YouTube is. I know how this stuff works. You know,
you have several Tumblrs.
I have 600 games on my shelf
over there. Okay. You now have internet that doesn't explode. And
yeah, so it's really easy to get distracted. So find a way of keeping yourself focused on what you're doing. For me, when I paint, as you know, it's always music.
Hmm.
Oh man, I can't even imagine. And some people, they don't work like that. Some people need absolute peace and quiet and no distraction. But for me, oh man, having music is perfect. I can't paint without it.
Usually I find that what helps me paint is to listen to the ramblings of some crazy Australian cat.
Hmm. Is that why Skype was invented? But yeah, so find yourself something that works. You know, if you need complete silence to code.
I say that, but no, there's actual truth to that. Like if you have somebody that you can talk to, as well, hopefully not talking to. But,
hello, yeah,
hello. I derailed there again. But no, if you have a similar minded person who you can draw creative inspiration from, then by all means talk to them on Skype, because I find that it puts me at ease and helps me out a lot more when I'm painting and I'm talking to you, because then I can just like shoot off the background to you and, you know, ask you for advice, or if you want a Sergeant Sweetston and say, no, you gotta do the lighting better, use a soft brush, yeah, that sort of thing.
That's a perfect impersonation.
That's exactly what you sound like.
But that's a good point. You know, we've got all these social medias now. You got Twitter, you got MSN, if that's still a thing, I don't know. You've got Skype, you've got IRC, you've got Facebook, you've got the forums, man. You've got so much stuff. Talking to like-minded people really, really helps. You know, you're not stuck on your own, laying on the carpet going, boo-hoo-hoo, I have no friends, and eating all of the marshmallows from a mega-sized pack of marshmallows and then feeling ill afterwards. So, you know.
You've just described my Saturday night.
So, I talk to tons of AGS guys, and if you don't have me on Skype, what's my Skype thing? Add me on Skype, because I love talking to people on Skype.
Yeah, me too. Nobody ever talks to me on Skype, and I'm always like, oh, boo-hoo. Well,
right, so I said
nobody ever talks to me on Skype, but I mean, like, no new people ever talk to me on
Skype. Right, so I'm Ben-304 on Skype, and I'm sickeningly friendly. If you add me, I will talk to you.
And I'm Grundislav, as difficult as that is to believe.
That's really hard to remember and believe.
It really is hard to remember and believe. But yeah, add me on Skype, add me on Twitter as well. I'm Grundislav Games, all one word. And I'll tweet at you, I'll talk to you on Skype.
Tweet to anyone. How many tweets have you done? How many tweetings have you had?
What are you talking about? I tweet to people all the time.
Like how many? How many tweets have you had?
How many tweets do I have?
Yeah, how many tweets have you tweeted?
How many tweets have I tweeted in total?
Yeah.
The total tally of tweets that I that I tweet.
Alright, enough alliteration, give us the facts.
1,824.
What's that? I've done 10,876.
Yeah, but you're a nerd.
I'm the tweet king. I've out-tweeted you by a factor of 10.
That's great. But look, I tweet important things. I don't just tweet important. Yeah, you tweet, so. Oh, I'm licking my butt. Oh, look at me. I've washed my paws today. Here we go.
I think we're getting distracted from our podcast, which is about deadlines. Man, can I just say...
Well, the deadline...
The least professional thing ever. Look, I'm going to deadline blow for you while you talk.
Okay, good. Do that.
These are bubble-scented people. I always keep my bubbles handy.
But see, now the people are getting insights into what our conversations are actually like. We're not putting up a front for the people. We're not putting up a facade. This is real. This is raw. This is how we are. So if you listen to this and you still want to talk to us for some strange reason, go ahead and add us on Skype and or Twitter or whatever social media, except Facebook. Don't friend me on Facebook. Lots of people. See, I feel bad because lots of people on Twitter, add me as a friend on Facebook, and I don't accept, I only accept friends, see, for some reason I'm elitist on Facebook, and I only accept friend requests from people that I actually know, and it's only because I hate it when there's people on Facebook that have, like, 5,000 friends, and it's half of them they've never met in real life. I like to keep it real on Facebook.
Can I just say these bubbles smell amazing?
What are they scented like?
Bubblegum scented.
Oh.
You came to my house and I never even blew any smelly bubbles for you.
I know. What the hell? Well, next time I go to your house, you can blow them at me.
But anyway, so yeah, having someone else to talk to, I remember when I was making Android, and I'd gotten this thing where I'd sort of gone for nearly a year without releasing anything, and none of my projects were finished, and I was having really trouble getting motivated, and I was like, oh man, I just want to do something. So I was making any Android, and every single night I sent off a build of the game to Bichelotti and Ghost, who were very kind and played through it each day and gave me little feedbacks, you know, like, oh, you know, and even when it was just, you know, six backgrounds and any walking around them, they would give me feedback, and I was like, you know, that's all you could do. And I was like, oh man, this is really great. So I find getting feedback from people really motivates you, really works, you know. And if I've got friends who are working on projects, like I have to plug DKH's project, Wings of Saint Nazaria, which I hope I've, you know, pronounced right. This is an amazing project which I've been
keeping. Oh, it is.
You know,
it absolutely is.
And I always ask him about it. I basically nag him about it because I really want to see it finished. You know, I get excited about my friend's projects, and I always ask them. I think I ask you about a Golden Wake every day.
I must do,
you know.
And Joel Staffhasto asks me about a Golden Wake quite often, and I ask him about Cathy Rain.
Yeah, I nag him about Cathy Rain as well.
Well,
sorry, Joel. He's listening. I know he listens to our podcast.
Oh, okay. Sorry. Well, hello, Joel.
Hi, Joel. see, listeners of our podcast.
Look at how friendly we are.
Yeah, look at this. We'll probably mention you on the podcast. Hi, Punch. How are you?
Punch. Yeah. I hope you're drinking beer and shooting cows. Or not shooting cows.
He is a cow.
He is, well, don't shoot yourself.
Licking cows.
Salt.
Hang on. Delicious. You've never had Salt Lake. I have. It's delicious. Maybe you have.
How do you know I've never had Salt Lake? You don't know me. You don't know my life.
Okay. But
wait, when have you had Salt Lake? You're not a deer.
Dude, I grew up on a farm.
I know, but why would you lick Salt Lake?
Man, my brother and I used to chow down on that stuff.
What?
This is the weirdest podcast ever.
Wait. Tell me this story. I've never heard this one
before. Bro, there was salt lick there in the shed, and my brother and I would eat every damn thing, you know. There was the molasses bucket that, ooh, you know, that animals eat, and we were like, yeah, molasses, delicious. I used to eat dog food as a kid. What? Man, I ate everything. My brother used to eat stock cubes and glue sticks.
Can I just say, this explains a lot.
You just learned my secret recipe for, like, AGS power potions. I'm like, what's the secret? I'm like, dog food, salt lick, and glue sticks.
How do you make so many backgrounds in so quick a time?
Glue sticks and salt lick and dog food.
Man, that's such an adventure game puzzle.
That's a power diet.
I'm going to make an adventure game now where you have those inventory items and you put them together and you make the magical 304 potion.
But anyway, so people always post, right? This always gets me. People always post on our podcast thread. They're like, oh man, listening to you guys is the most inspiring thing. I always feel like I want to work again. So that's why talking to people is great. It inspires you to do stuff. And if you don't have any friends, listen to our podcast on repeat permanently.
We'll be your friends. Your friends who you've never met.
That's it.
Or something like that. Like, yeah.
Wow, we've got really distracted. But basically, here's the thing.
Have you ever heard a podcast that sticks to topic?
No, but here's my thing. Michelle and Sal, if you're listening...
Let me tell you something. Those podcasts are boring. It's more fun.
I'm playing with Putty right now. But if Michelle and Sal is listening to this...
My headphone cord.
Good. Stick to your deadline and release Beyond Good and Evil 2, because I really want it. Because I really like it.
Michelle is not listening to this podcast.
Don't sell yourself short. Aim for the stars.
Okay.
I really like Beyond Good and Evil, Michelle. And I've been playing Rayman recently, and I like Rayman. And it's cool.
I also like I also would like Beyond Good and Evil 2. And I really want Rayman Legends. And that should have been out already if it hadn't been for Nintendo. Well, actually, it should have been
out. That was Ubisoft.
Ubisoft, yes.
Ubisoft. You silly French people. But yeah, so...
Let's not believe in deadlines.
What else do you want to talk about? What else can we talk about?
I don't know. What else would you like to talk about?
I don't know. I don't know. Take lots of screenshots and put them on a Tumblr and look at mine. Look at my Tumblr.
Oh, yeah.
This is turning into the...
We should probably wrap up because it's already getting close to 50 minutes and I don't think people can handle more than 50 minutes of us at a time.
No. Otherwise, they might accidentally fall in love with us and stalk us. That would be creepy. Please don't.
Yeah, please don't do that. Yeah,
I've really turned into a narcissist in the latter half of the podcast,
haven't I? You haven't turned into one. You've just brought that side of you has just come out because, you know, we've dropped the pretense.
It's all right. My cat's sleeping. When he wakes up, I'll remember that I'm merely his servant and I'm really worth nothing.
Anyway, you were saying you have a screenshot Tumblr that you...
We talked about this last time.
Let's talk about it again. What is it?
I put screenshots on there since last time. It's a Tumblr where
I started a thread about it.
I did. Yeah, so I like looking at DOS games. I like looking at the art on them. So if you feel like looking at some DOS screenshots, come and look at my art. And also, guys, seriously, play the Oro games.
Yeah. They're not getting any attention. And I'm not just saying this because you and I made one, but there's every single one.
There's some really cool games in there.
There are some really cool games in there. Do you want to talk about them?
Next time. Next time when it's all been released and everyone's sort of played them. You know,
okay. And then we can talk more in detail about ours and be coy again.
I'm not going to be coy at all. I'm going to tell everybody everything. It'll be an expose.
Oh, okay. Well, fine.
And I'll blow banana-scented bubbles next podcast. This is my promise to the people.
And I won't wear pants, bubbles. So it'll really be a
You're not wearing bit. Pants now.
Actually, I am. Shockingly.
This changes everything. Goodbye.
Goodbye.